Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com with your hosts Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right.
All right. Greetings, everyone. This is Jordan Michael, your host. I have my co-host here, Corey Stevens. Really excited to have our first show with you guys. Corey, what do we have today?
Well, it's our flagship show. So we've got, I think we're going to generally give the rundown, I would say, for our new audience of what we're all about. And I think we should probably talk about freemen and patriots.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a good starting topic there.
Just to start off with that.
All right, yeah, I've had a little bit of experience with that myself, Corey. We got together about 4 years ago, and we started delving real deep into this type of stuff. I'd been doing this for about a decade. The Freeman Patriot game is a real, real big target for a lot of people who are seeking, I guess, what you would call freedom, for lack of a better word. Mm. So you got to be really careful. There's a lot of misinformation out there. And trust me, guys, I've used this myself. You know, I've done these processes just to test them. And 9 times out of 10, if you're just using paperwork and you're not contracting, you're going to have a bad time. Mm. All right. So maybe give us an example, Corey, for our listeners. What exactly have you run across in this Freeman Patriot scheme?
Well, there's this term that has come up that I think they call it a sovereign citizen, which from my understanding and people who I've learned from is kind of an oxymoron, right? Because as we know, a citizen is could be considered a subject of some entity, you know, of a government or what have you, and which is the opposite of a sovereign. So the whole concept of sovereign citizen, grammatically or what have you, doesn't really make sense. It seems to be this terminology that someone has come up with to be able to label certain people who are, as you say, looking for some kind of remedy or freedom or what have you, but might not have all the eggs in the basket in doing so.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. And for the benefit of all of our listeners out there, just a short bio on me and Corey. I've actually been into this for years now. When I was a senior in high school, I would actually go skip school and sit into the traffic courts. And I was actively going out and getting tickets just to see what this whole thing was about. My mom owned her own law firm, you know, so I was already, you know, into that whole thing, just looking at these things. And so I'd go in there and, you know, I'd just sit down and I'd observe. And, you know, every once in a while, I would see one of these Freeman Patriot guys, you know, for lack of a better term. You know, we don't want to classify anybody, but there are certain behaviors that you would classify if you had to what would be termed as a patriot or a Freeman guy. And one running theme I always noticed, Corey, while I was sitting there is they were very argumentative. Mm. They didn't give the other person a chance to speak. Mm. They didn't listen to valid offers or things that were being given to them, or opportunities even that the judge or some other person there was really trying to help them with. Mm. And what I noticed is they manifested their own results, being that most of the time they either didn't get what they wanted or they got sent back to another hearing or they got put in jail, literally taken to jail. Mm. So that really intrigued me. And I started doing some of the techniques with my own little flair and some of these paperwork things and getting into all this research. And I was having a bad time with it. I really was, man. Like, I would be going to jail over little tiny traffic tickets, you know, sitting out fines and all sorts of different things. You got to be really careful and know what you're doing if you're going to administrate your own affairs. You know, mm-hmm. This is not about practicing law without a license or any of these types of things. And you have a right to administer your body, your time, your interests, and no one can infringe upon that unless it's by your consent.
Right. Right. Otherwise, those things you mentioned, otherwise known as one's property, right? One's time, one's energy, one's liberty, one's body.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you do with the creative forces inside you, you know, what can be created from your hand or from your thoughts or from your voice and so on and so forth. Mm. These are things that are inherent. So that's what this show is really about. You know, we came together to bring some multidimensional concepts about what I would term wordsmithing, which is sort of my business that I do now that I've built off of this experience. And the multidimensionality of contract is an important thing because it permeates everybody's life in every facet. It really touches every single thing, including just you by yourself, your agreements with yourself, right?
Yeah, man. Talk to us about wordsmithing. Huh. Give us some insight into that. It's an interesting concept. Maybe our audience would want to hear some more about that.
Yes. And the term wordsmithing, I can't claim it. It's something that's been around, but I have coined a phrase and have trademarked tactical wordsmithing, which, you know, don't get the wrong idea. This is not something that's meant to be violent or super aggressive or anything like that. The word tactical merely denotes its purpose, which is to be super efficient, get a very swift, known, solid result, right? So wordsmithing and tactical wordsmithing is essentially what I do, is essentially I will analyze what I know from the past about certain things that are happening in the present. I'll look at the surroundings. I'll analyze the people themselves. So if I'm in a courtroom, I'll be dealing with, okay, what is this person doing? Why are they doing it? You know, what is this person saying? Where are they going with that? What are they really trying to get my response to be? All these types of things. And analyzing that and coming up with a proper solution and then speaking that solution in a way that they will know. Sometimes you can't always tell the truth in court, Corey. You know, if you're actually going to be doing these types of techniques, not the Freeman stuff or the Patriot stuff, but pure contracting and tactical wordsmithing, got to understand that sometimes you can't let anybody else know except the people you're dealing with. It's got to be private.
Right.
And yeah, so the tactical wordsmithing encompasses all of those aspects. It really goes deeper than that. We'll be touching on that in the rest of our show and more shows to come. But I really like your perspective on it. You're familiar with it, you know, and you have a really good way of sort of breaking it down and explaining it to other people. So I appreciate you for that, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. I mean, like you mentioned in a courtroom situation, for example, and back to the so-called Freeman Patriot guys. In my understanding, one of the difficulties that these guys run into is that they're blowing up the spot in the courtroom. You know, they're not acting colorably. You know, they are alerting the public. So as you say, they're not really negotiating with the judge or the prosecutor or what have you in a way that might even allow them to save face, right?
That's right.
Without letting other people know, you know, alerting, you're not acting, you're in a public venue. So you got to use, just like they do in a courtroom, you know, they use codes and they have processes and things like that. And to go in and blow up a courtroom, you're not, in my experience and from what I've heard from other folks, you're not going to really get a good reaction. They're going to try
They'll shut you down immediately.
Yeah, they'll shut you down.
I've been dragged away trying some of these things. I've literally been dragged by the list, right? And, you know, we talk about the court a lot. This happens everywhere when you're on the side of the road with a police officer, if you're negotiating agreements with your family, all of these things. You really got to know how to gel with the situation as opposed to resisting it or being attached to the specific outcome.
Right, right. Yeah, Jordan, talk more about talk more about contracting. I mean,
yeah, contracting is a real deep thing. If you understand that, I'll just say this: it's my opinion, or I am of the opinion that everything that we experience in a physical reality is a small part of the whole, universally or multidimensionally, if you will. Mm-hmm. Meaning, law on this planet is a small part of law in the universe. Mm-hmm. Society on this planet is a small part of society in the universe. Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Math, religion, science, politics, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. So understanding the whole concept and the wholeness of what contracting really is a key essential to mastering the tactical wordsmithing mm-hmm. and applying it successfully in your life. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whether you're trying to get something recorded, whether you're dealing with a family member, whether you're in court, whether you're resolving a conflict of some sort with a neighbor, as opposed to duking it out in the city or calling code compliance on each other because your trash wasn't put out on the right day or was, you know, 2 inches to the side of where it should be. In society, we've gotten to this level where people are always looking at others for validation of if they're doing their behavior correctly. Mm. And when you seek the validation outwards instead of validating inwards first and applying that, you're going to get your results that really are substandard and not going to be what you want. Mm. For instance, I hear people when they don't get something they want at a public venue or maybe the tickets are out or at the movie theater or something happens and it's unexpected and they react sort of like a child, you know. Mm. This is not a judgment thing. It's just something I've observed. Mm. And they ask the person for validation as to why they can't have it. So, what do you mean? Why can't I? You know, what do you mean? Why can't you do this? Mm. And if you understand that stuff like that is going to give you nothing but heartbreak, you're going to want this and want that and try to get this and all these things. And that person is going to be validated themselves by what you're asking them. Oh, I can make up an excuse and have you go away? Oh, great. You understand?
Right, right.
So it really should be, can you show me how this isn't an inconvenience to me and what are you willing to do about it?
Right.
How can we work together?
Right.
Those types of things.
Right, right. If I can't get my desired outcome, what kind of beneficial outcome might I be able to get?
That's right. And so instead of throwing the baby away with the bathwater, then you should definitely consider the whole aspect of the relationship. How can I further a relationship with this person? Whether that relationship is just learning and growth in the moment and you both split ways and never see each other again, you know, no matter what it is, like I said, the movie theater at a clerk recorder office or, you know, in the courtroom or on the side of the road or anywhere, you'd be thinking about these things. And that's what tactical wordsmithing is. And always seeking an efficient, mutually beneficial result.
Right. All parties whole.
That's right.
All parties whole. So wordsmithing, based on words, right? And words, as we know, especially in the English language, tend to have multiple definitions depending on...
And multiple tonal receptions.
Right.
You're
exactly
right. So the same word could be said by 10 different people with 10 different intents or 10 different tones, and it will be received differently. So
right.
There's a part of that that's incorporated as well.
Right. Right. So so we've talked about contracting. Now, just off the top, in common parlance, a contract is some agreement that two people sign. It's a piece of paper.
I know where you're going with this.
Right?
I love you.
Right.
Yeah.
Typically, right. Typically, that's a contract when someone thinks of that. What other kind of contracts do we deal with in life?
Well, you touched on a really important point, and that is that what people think is usually not what really is.
Mm.
So people will wave, I've seen this before, even attorneys will wave a piece of paper around in the courtroom, but we had a contract and this is the agreement.
Mm.
And if you go back and look at the case law, if you go back and look at the customs, if you go back and look at the pure essence of what an agreement really is, It's fluid, changeable, and dynamic. Mm-hmm. It never really ends, because even when it ends or terminates, those parties might come back and contract with each other in the future. So really, they have an agreement to not have an agreement until they need each other again.
Right. Right.
And so it, in that essence, the performance of the parties, it's the performance of the parties and how are they performing or not performing, which dictates what are the terms of the contract or what might be in contest as to, you know, the new terms of the contract. Because if one party is performing one way and the other party is performing or not performing and they don't match up, even though they had something on paper, you could say this party is dishonoring. But until the other party, the first party that's doing it right, says, hey, these are our terms, I'm making this claim that you continue to perform this way, which is an offer within the offer, then when they exhaust their claims, then the other party is in dishonor.
Right.
So it's very multi-leveled and it keeps going back and forth. It's so fluid and dynamic because the other party has the chance to cure their dishonor or renegotiate the terms of curing. It gets real deep, Corey.
Right.
And so these are what a contract really are, or what contracts really are, agreements really are, is the performance and the fluid nature of the parties, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you do this every day. Hey, will you take me to the grocery store and I'll fill up your gas tank?
Right.
Hey, can I get an extra large fry? You know, okay, well, I was under the presumption that you wanted regular fries, so I tapped it into my little computer thingy here, but now I'm going to go ahead and delete it. And it might seem like an insignificant thing. Oh, well, yeah, I just had to press two buttons. Well, if you're really looking at the substance of what just happened, that was a renegotiation.
Right.
It shows up all over.
Everywhere. Right. You and I contracted to come onto this show today at a specific time.
That's right.
On a macro level, one might say that is it possible that human beings that come into the world have a contract with
absolutely
the Creator?
Absolutely, and with each other,
and with each other, and with animals and plants, and so.
Yes. Everything has a consciousness. Everything. Inanimate and animate. And again, these are just my opinions, but they're backed by knowing. I know this in my soul.
Right.
And I've told you before, but I've had a near-death experience or have been dead before. And that's happened pretty much every single year of my life, including I got shocked by 220 working on a plumbing job, last week.
And you're still here.
I'm still here.
It's
my contract. I have an out. I can go whenever I want.
Right, because it's fluid and dynamic. But your contract seems to be ironclad until certain things get accomplished.
I'm still here. I plan on sticking around for a while.
Well, good.
So yes, it's definitely something that reaches into your soul and encompasses the soul as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not just this. I think a lot of people, you know, including myself, and we're not immune unless you're some, you know, guru master, you know, making it rain whenever you want and changing the weather and setting pieces of paper on fire. Because there are people like that that exist. Mm. They're there.
Mm.
And I intend to get them on this show.
right.
You know, those types of things, if you're at that level, then great. If not, what I find is that a lot of people get sucked back into the denseness of, okay, this is reality. This is just how it works. This, I'm trading form for substance.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a legal term.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we seek to do here, Corey, and that's what we're going to continue to do on this radio show, is try to restore the substance in people's lives so that they can use what they now know to be contracting efficiently and use their time value efficiently, because no matter what you do in this world or anywhere else, it's still your time. And one could even argue, well, out of the body, you know, time works differently, or there is no time. Well, that's great, but there's still a concept of production, you understand, or beingness. Just you being there and being and existing is a time value. It's an exertion of sorts.
Right. Or there's some perception, there's some perceiving.
That's right.
Presence and observation.
Mm. Yes. So it's the most important thing you have.
Let's what about this what about expressed versus implied contracts?
Yes, that's also a multifaceted thing. That this sort of segues into constructive trusts, and you know, actual legitimate written down trusts. You know, the constructive trust is a term which describes a relationship that is fluid and switches back and forth. Something like, if three people are sitting, three attorneys, or one attorney and two assistants are sitting in a deposition room, you know, I'll just use vernacular that's familiar to me. And they're one sitting on the left of him, the other sitting on the right. And the one on the right, his pen goes out. And then the attorney in the middle, his pen goes out, right? And this is hypothetical, of course. And then the other side's pens go out. And the only person left in that room with a pen, you know, there's obviously more realistic examples. I just want to highlight the proximity relationship and how it goes back and forth. So the only person left in that room with a pen is the one on the left of the attorney. And now somebody is free to make a request or to make a proposal or to say something that would give awareness or notice to the person with a pen that somebody might have a need for a pen. And then the person with the pen would grant that, a grantor, or as it, you know, as it were. And they would trust somebody to conduct business. So maybe the other side asks for the pen, they grant it to them, and they could also be the beneficiary, because if they all get done, they can all go out and drink, and that case is done for the day and all that jazz, right? So it works in their favor, even though it's an opposing party. And so they grant the pen to the opposing party, who writes what they need to write for the benefit of, you know, getting this stuff out of the way, getting that deposition over with. Or, you know, at that point, that person could return it, you know, as a trustee, return it to the grantor, and then be the grantor trusting that side for the benefit of the attorney, or the benefit, you know, of them all again. So it's, I could go through how, you know, all the different 50 different ways you could create a trust and dissolve it and reverse it. But I just wanted to show you that that's what's happening with constructive trust. So you ask about implied versus express contracts. It's really the same thing, because a contract is just a trust. So having that reference, just know that it doesn't really matter if it's expressed or implied, other than for a few record keeping reasons. If you really know how to hold down your agreements and hold down different things in the moment, then you can do whatever you want with constructive trust or agreement or implied agreement.
Well, what about express trust? Typically, from my viewpoint, an express trust, it's expressed, so that typically the parties are aware that they are engaged in a trust or that they are engaged in a contract, right?
That's right.
Whereas implied trust or implied contract, not all the parties are necessarily aware that they're even involved in a contract.
You've really touched on the perfect item there, Corey. That's absolutely right. And the reason that can happen is because you're presumed, every person in a society is presumed to have a duty and presumed to have completed and is successfully exercising the duty to know and be competent in these types of situations what an agreement is and what's really happening and what their behavior could show. If somebody is telling you, go stand over here, and maybe you're in a job interview or something like that, you know, in the waiting room, and they say, please go have a seat, right? And you go take a seat, it's presumed that you know the etiquette, right? Because you're following their orders, you're doing this, you're doing that. You know, would you like some water? You're presumed that you know you can take benefit of the water, because there's a chance you might not get the job and you came out here for nothing. So having the knowledge of, you know, what's really going on, what are my duties and how do I enforce them, and what am I supposed to know, that's something that's real important, and it's presumed on everyone, whether they actually know or not. And so there, you know, you could talk about, oh, well, that's unfair that they don't know, and that's not full disclosure, and that's not a contract. Well, if the performance of the parties shows that they're okay with not having full disclosure, right? If you continue to act and you don't ask questions, you're okay with it.
Right, because ignorance of the law is no excuse. And trust agreements, constructive or implied, right? The nature of trusts is that is full disclosure required, as in a contract?
Not necessarily.
Right. So talk more about these implied contracts that folks, you know, a typical United States citizen, for example, right? Typical.
I see. And then you can go through a lot with that. You've got a lot. Bring it back to the Patriot guys. You've got a lot of the Patriot mythology out there about the driver's license and the right to travel and the birth certificate and the this and the that and all these things. You know, the right to travel. Yeah, you have a right to travel. You also have a duty not to infringe on anybody else out there in the public while you're on the public roadways, and to be fully insured somehow to recoup their expenses if should you hit them or they hit you.
Right.
Right. So as long as you can stand on that and be privately insured, then great. Go out there and travel and know that there might be a risk that you'll get your window broken. They'll taser you. They'll pull you out. I'm speaking from personal experience. They'll torture you in jail, strap you into, you know, there's all sorts of things that could happen, which really boosted my game because now I know how to, stand on and avoid those situations. But so the Freeman guys have a lot of mythology that are going to get people in trouble if they continue to try to apply it that way. Mm. But the long and short of it is that, yes, the birth certificate, yes, the driver's license, yes, all these credit applications and loan applications you're signing your name on, yes, every time you give your social security number, you are creating constructive trust or you are participating in some capacity. And that capacity could change. You wear multiple different hats depending on what stage of life you're in, what situation you're in. You're in your private life. You might be a beneficiary on the birth certificate. You walk into that courtroom, buddy, you better beware because they're getting you to play multiple roles, getting all the value sucked out of your estate and then using it to back their bonds and trading platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Understand?
Right.
So it's a double-edged sword. Yes, there is truth that there are contracts that a standard U.S. citizen are subjected to and they don't really understand them or know them. But at the same time, the roles in those contracts are up for grabs and you mm-hmm. can solidify where you want to be as long as you know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like maybe talk about the fluidity of the trustee beneficiary relationship, say, well, in any contract, but let's say in a court situation.
Well, yeah, the court situation's very, very complex and convoluted because there's so many accounts, there's so many accounts receivable and payable, there's so many bonds, there's so many trading things going on, there's so many Robert's Rules of Order and trust minutes that are happening, you know, all these different types of things. And even if you kind of want to get into the spiritual side or esoteric side, there's dark magic, very dark rituals. I have evidence and proof of this, and I've experienced it myself. There is absolutely dark magic and dark rituals going on of some sort of nature within the entire legal system. Mm-hmm. It's completely nasty. It's a very nasty thing.
Black robes and such.
Yeah. Well, magistrate,
right.
Magi.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So, and that goes back to how you were saying there's different words, you know, different meanings of words. So the core of the court system is based on constructive trust, like we were speaking about. It's fluid, it's dynamic, it moves quickly and in ways that you are almost imperceptible, such as a judge will, if you're pleading your case and you're getting somewhere and the other side pleads their case and then, you know, for whatever reason, the judge says something to you and you answer and he says, I'm taking what you're telling me as. You better pay attention to that phrase right there.
Mm.
That's saying, if you say anything else, I'm, except for renegotiating what I just offered to you, then I'm taking what you're telling me as my terms. you know, whatever they said after that. So I'm taking what you're telling me as a plea of not guilty. I'm going to set this for a hearing date, and you're going to come back for blah, 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 right? And if you don't come back with something of the nature of, I'm taking what you're telling me as and your choice to enter not guilty as your agreement to waive all your immunities and be subject to, you know, the full settlement and closure of this matter, and my time and my body are no longer collateral.
Right. So it's the batting back and forth of of who's beneficiary, who's trustee, who's who's obliged, who's responsible, who's obliged to settle the debt.
That's right.
In this particular manner.
To adjust the accounts, to trade, to provide the value. Who's responsible to secure and obtain the value?
Right.
To back what they're doing.
Right.
You understand that all these cases, traffic tickets, cases, all of this stuff, criminal charges, everything is commercialized. They pool them together on a national level through federally reinsured insurance companies. In fact, I believe Gene Keating touched on this. They go through the Northern District of Ohio Federal Court Administration Office, and then they're reinsured federally, and they're traded as U.S. bonds, stocks, securities, notes, futures, obligations, so on and so forth, to back the interest payments on the national debt, which is fake.
Right.
You know, all these different things. So it's a real deep thing, Corey. It really is.
And my experience is that, and not to aggrandize myself or you or anybody else who has who's aware of some of this stuff, but there's a profound lack of awareness as to how the system really operates.
Oh, absolutely. And there's an extreme derision or mode of attack geared towards anybody who steps any inch outside of the box. You're a loner, you're a you know, domestic terrorist, or you're a this, or you're a that, you know, all these different types of things. And it's a nasty business, brother, that we're here in this time, in this state, and that's what we're here to do, is to return the awareness. It's got to happen. We're going to do it.
Yeah, and my feeling is that the only reason why there are these iniquities that we face,
it's because they're allowed.
It's because we allow them.
That's right.
We don't know. We're not aware, and therefore, that's a acquiescence.
Yeah. If you don't know that, if you don't find a way to provide value or push the burden of providing value onto the trustee in whatever situation, say for instance a criminal charge, if you don't know that, and you go in there and they are the trustee, and you don't make them, you know, liable for handling it without your body, then what are they going to do? They're going to reach out and they're going to look for anything that's exuding value, which the only thing that provides value in this world, Corey, is the body, the creation of things with your hands, with your mouth, with your mind, right? That's producing the value, which is bought, sold, traded, returned, destroyed, recycled.
That's the money.
Yeah, that's the money.
Because there is no money, as it were.
That's right. And so if you're in a courtroom and they can't find any other value and you've got criminal charges, they're going to take the value of your body, which is valuable. They're going to put it in a container, because what do you do with valuable things? You put it in a safe place.
You lock it up. You lock it up.
You lock it up and you get interest on it while it sits there.
Right, you get your warehouse receipt, and that floats around and gets sold around until, or in other words, a bond. And when the bond matures, or in other words, when your sentence is up, then all parties are made whole. Never mind that you were in a hole for 5 years or whatever the term of the bond, the maturity of the bond was.
And that's real, you know, and that's reality. That's the physical reality. It goes a lot deeper than that. And so we're going to go to a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to touch on the actual multidimensional aspects of what we've been talking about. And it's going to get deep. So I hope you guys are ready.
All right.
Having trouble with harassing collection agencies? Creditors breathing down your neck? Feeling like you're drowning in debts? Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths is here to help you now. GTAC is an ecclesiastical guild association of aggressive debt assassins who can eliminate your debts, free negative marks from your credit report, and get you compensated for unfair collection practices or emotional damages. They have a proven track record of success and sustainable results, which will have creditors and debt collectors shaking in their boots. This is not your typical credit repair or verification. GTAC uses proven techniques and negotiation tactics to completely eliminate your debt or conflict, remove negative marks from your credit reports, and in most cases, GTAC will retrieve compensation for you. Call for your free 15-minute consultation today at 214-290-3053.
All right, welcome back, everyone. I'm here with Corey, and earlier we touched on the whole Freeman Patriot scheme, the mythology behind that. We also went into a little bit of implied versus expressed trusts and contracts, and what really constitutes an agreement. And we've gotten into the surface of those types of things. Now we're going to go a little bit deeper, okay? So, Corey, I really want to get a little bit spiritual here because, you know, as I said, I've had those near-death experiences every single year of my life, and it's really put me in touch with this channel, for lack of a better word, of just pure knowing and just this source energy that just comes through. And it really assists me in the tactical wordsmithing and other ventures in my life, if you will. But I want people to have, and our listeners to have, an understanding, a real understanding of how deep this touches your soul. You're here for purposes. You're here for many very different purposes, to interact with many very different souls and people, to have many different experiences. And, you know, there's a lot of New Age mythology about, oh, we're here to go through hard times to learn lessons, you know, and that might be a part or an aspect of it, but that's a program, right? That's still just another program. Don't get caught up in it. Yes, you might have hard times. Yes, you might have good things that come from that or lessons learned. But understand that there's a bigger permeating theme that you're here to accomplish, right? And what that is something that you're going to have to figure out for yourself. But it starts with releasing the resistance to it and understanding that you have agreed to be in this body no matter how hard it gets for you at times. The bills, you know, the personal relationships, the people harassing you, whatever the case may be, feeling down about yourself, maybe you feel a little bit more overweight than you should be, all these different types of things that are really just perceptions that we have about ourselves based on false standards, society standards. It's something that has to be looked through, and you got to go real deep and inside. And when you do that, you'll understand your true purpose. You won't, and maybe some people will, but at least for me, I understood perfectly and clearly what I'm here to do, which is to destabilize and break down old control structures and build up new sustainable methods and ways to negotiate and communicate. Now, some people might not be able to articulate that, oh, that's what I want to do, you know, for whatever it is that their passion is, but they still know and they feel it, and that will guide you. You'll build the right connections, you'll go to the right places, you'll be in the right places at the right times to engender that in your life, in this life. Because death is an illusion, people. I'm here to tell you. It's like going to sleep and waking up from a dream. You know, it's total crap to be scared of leaving the physical body. It really is. You know, one thing I've had to struggle with and get over is other people leaving me. Or pets leaving, you know, family members that I was close with. And when you look at death, that's really the ultimate bodily contract, isn't it? Like when it's your time, you know, whether you get hit by a bus or you get sick or you get shot in a war or, you know, whatever happens, you fall off a cliff. That's irrevocable.
Right.
But just like all contracts, there's always renegotiation. So if you fall off a cliff and at the very moment, at the bottom, you fully, consciously, and wholly, with your entire being, go, I want to stay. You might not like having every single bone in your body broken but still being alive, but that might happen. Or you can manifest that you actually learn how to fly on the way down. That has happened. Mm. You know, the flying nun examples, those types of things. Mm. People having spiritual experiences in the cathedrals before they change the music frequencies. Mm. People would actually levitate. There's stories about this all over the place. Mm. So these things are possible, and you can renegotiate. But the death is sort of the final physical contract. It's like, okay, now you're going to into something new, and if you want to come back, you can. And this is the natural order of things that I'm talking about. And if you kind of want to get a little darker, right, there's always third-party interference in contracts. It happens, whether it's environmental or, you know, personal or whatever the case may be. You're always going to run into it. And how the two original parties, or however many original parties, respond and perform dictates the new terms of the contract.
Mm.
So when you talk about things like, I told you we're going to go deep, when you talk about things like archons and Gnostic teachings, whereby the concept is that this planet and this galactic region is sort of had been under a invasion, if you will, by these parasitic entities that invade consciousness and basically replicate, or they make holograms, you know. Mm. And this is why you have physicists and other people pondering, is the nature of our reality a hologram? You know, well, there's fake consciousness and fake energies and replicated things being permeated. And the concept is this. So this ties into the contracts because we're all here and we're all under it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to get into the structure of it, just kind of segue for a bit, the planets themselves are part of the machinery, you know? You have research that states that the moon is older than the Earth, and some of the planets in the solar system didn't originate here.
Mm.
Basically, the Earth and the Sun and a couple other planets are pretty much the only ones that really truly originated here.
Mm. mm-hmm.
And then if you look at it, you know, you have the models of the solar system where the Sun's in the center hanging from a wire from your ceiling or whatever, and you have these rings around it, right?
Mm.
Like Saturn. Rings or something with the different planets farther and farther away.
Mm.
That's crap. What you have is the sun spiraling around. It's doing a spiral and spiraling through the galaxy. So it's like a fractal. The spiral is within the spiral.
Mm.
And planets at their respective distances are spiraling behind.
Mm.
And these are energy. And these energies are creating. This is astrology now, right? Mm-hmm. This is how people can use astrology to tell what's happening, because the energies are consistent at certain points in between the planets when they're in relationship with each other,
mm-hmm.
or relationship with other objects, celestial mm-hmm. objects in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these things are spinning, spiraling around like a DNA spiral.
Right.
And all of this is being used, and the planets, I believe, this is my opinion again, have been purposely placed in distance in such a way, so like the moon controls lunar cycles and women's menstrual cycles and emotions and water and all this stuff, lunar, lunatic, right? There's a reason for these things.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's being used as a negative energy base that's basically projecting, like amplifying some of the energy that's being used from the rotation of these planets. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this goes into Vedic texts and all sorts of different things that talk about the energy that's produced from the rotation of the stars and the planets and all these things. It's real stuff
mm-hmm.
that trickles down into our little physical reality of physics and chemistry and so on and so forth.
Right, right.
So we're here. We're contracted to stay in these physics. So that's, I just wanted to touch on that. I appreciate you letting me get into that.
Yeah. And those arrangements of the heavenly bodies, if you will, or the planetary bodies and so on and so forth, they're operating off of their own contracts, if you will. So it's like contracts within contracts, wheels within wheels.
That's right.
And so our contract here on Earth is dependent on, you know, probably an infinite number of other contracts that are already in place.
Yeah. It's the universe is a wonderful place. Dimensionality is a wonderful thing. It's all fluid. It's all infinite. It's all possible. It's all and nothing and something
mm-hmm.
at the same time, right?
Yes.
And even like, let's break it down. Let's just get deeper then. the nature of time. You know, and these are things that I've just kind of like sourced from my, basically gleaned from this channel that I was talking about earlier, and then backed up with real physics experiments and all sorts of things that I've researched, not performed myself, obviously, but researched. So like the nature of time. Well, time works differently in different environments and different conditions. And if that's just a part of the whole, then the whole means that there's an infinite version of time. So there could be no time in one dimension. There could be time that runs backwards. There could be time that skips back in 20-second increments. You know, there could be time that goes boop, 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 back and forth like a, you know, like a tennis match, past the future, past the future. All infinite possibilities. And this actually ties into the tactical wordsmithing. Because if there's infinite possibilities and you can tie into that and intend your consciousness to quantum connect, if you will, or entangle with that reality, then in a sense you're bringing the truth of that reality into this reality to a certain extent. What I mean by that is, if you change a light bulb, right, on December 16th, 2015, and somebody asks you, hey, did you change that light bulb? And you say, yeah, I changed it, I changed it yesterday or something like that, but it's really been 2 days. In some reality, you had changed it a day later. So that was true. And if that person won't be harmed or affected in a negative way by you giving information as if that were true, right, and you truly intend for that to be true and you stand in that reality, then you're really not lying anymore, are you? And you're not manipulating because you're not gaining a benefit and you're not concealing or hiding something that would detriment somebody else.
It was
anything like an act like changing a light bulb.
In your mind, it happened the day after it actually happened.
That's right.
So that that could have some reality to it.
Yeah. And you know, that might just be a very hollow example, but there's real substantial examples that, you know, I've had to use in real life under duress. You know, these are certain things that, you know, if you have no way out other than to create your own reality, then create your own reality, as long as it's not done with deceptive or misleading intent or purpose.
Yeah, I think there's an example in the New Testament, I believe, attributed to Jesus, where it was like, you know, if you end up in the courts or something, and you end up in a tight situation, don't worry about what you're going to say. You know, if you're really in the zone, and you have a real pure intent of achieving a particular outcome, then you'll know what to say in that moment.
That's exactly right, and that's what happens for me. And, you know, a couple of my students in the Guild of Tactical Wordsmiths have really mastered that skill. A little bit of preparation and analysis, but not relying on it, and being willing to let it go or change it or renegotiate it in the moment. And I've seen them, and I have videos of them successfully doing this. Some people get it, some people don't. It's very important to be fluid.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest tools, most effective tools for keeping us locked in a particular mindset, you know, particularly as it pertains to a court situation, but generally as well, is fear. You know, how many times have you gone into a situation where you think you're prepared for it? Right, you've done your homework, you've gone down your synopsis, you have your outcome in mind, and then you get there and you just fall apart.
That's right.
Right, because fear takes over, and that's a very, it's very important for us to get a hold of our fears. And from my perspective, fears are based on a lack of knowledge.
Exactly. A lack of information. And if you have the information within yourself that says, no matter what happens in the real big scheme of things, if I leave this body or anything that happens physically is nothing compared to what I could do and experience out of the body, that really pulls it all back into perspective for you.
Right.
Especially in a court situation.
Right.
Where you walk to a building that has black magic rituals being done on it. to engender fear. Yeah. And so using that to your advantage or just dissolving it is real important. Mm. And even in personal relationships and personal interactions, I do see a lot of a fear of asking for what you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real core theme of tactical wordsmithing, is asking for what you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And putting it on the table, giving disclosure. This is what I'm doing. This is where I'm at. This is what I want. How do you feel about it?
Right, right.
Where can we go from here? And if you're not asking, you're not going to get it.
Yeah. And isn't that fear, maybe a fear of being rejected?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Or not being heard or discounted.
Or offending someone with your request or something along those lines.
The way that you're requesting. And if you stand in your center and you're solid, and of course you're not going to be malicious to anyone for any reason.
Right.
Unless it needs to happen because it's, you know, you're just expressing something that will resolve the situation that's being expressed on you.
Right.
You're not violently hurting somebody, right?
Right.
Or if life is threatened, obviously that's an exception. There's always an exception to all of these things.
Right.
Right. Now, if that's not the case, then you gotta be willing to listen to what the other person's gonna say, and that fear can't get in the way.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
So you need to stand in your center and say what and do what you're going to do without expecting or doing it based on the response that you think you're going to expect or get.
Mm.
And if you can do that and just basically, Corey, you grab your balls and you throw them on the table sometimes and you say, this is where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
That's tactical wordsmithing. It has to happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're willing to stand there exposed and vulnerable in your position, but also be considering, well, maybe I should zip up my pants if I need to. I don't want to get smashed.
Right.
So you're always fluid and dynamic. So it's not one or the other. And if people can get over the fear, so let's just talk about some techniques then, you know, some things that I've used. Are you willing? Are you able? Are you capable? I phrase or start my request with these types of things. If it were to be beneficial to both of us, could we this, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
As opposed to, hey, can I ask you a question? Oh, okay, I kind of wanted to... you know, those types of things, which is not bad or good, but it's going to be ineffective.
Right. Well, you're reminding me of cooperation versus competition.
That's right.
Right. So, you know, whenever we've been trained to feel that when we go up against an adversary or a perceived adversary, right, that there's competition. That there's somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose, particularly in the judicial system, right?
Yep.
And in relationships and, you know, any number of areas, you know. So one thing that I try to implement or that I get to implement when I come across situations where that fear or that reluctance or reticence comes up in me, I look to be conscious of making that shift in my mind. You know, am I going to cooperate or am I going to be competitive? Am I going to create a win-win situation or am I going to fall into a win-lose situation? And then the win-lose situation, well, you're inevitably fearful of being the loser.
Yes. Yeah, so you gotta always consider the outcome for the other person, even if they're being an asshole to you. You understand?
Especially then.
Especially then. Because they're acting out of some sort of need or fear as well.
Exactly.
And if you can subside that fear or sway that, then you've created a bridge between the impasse that was previously obstructing you guys.
Right.
And that's what, you know, that's what needs to happen.
Right.
So things like, can we not? Are you not able to? Can you not show me how? Are we not going to this now? Would it not be better for us if we, you know,
right.
All those things techniques where you can start and then make your request.
Right, which is not a request. You're not actually making a request. You're posing a question, right? Would it not be better if, as opposed to, can I have, right?
Yeah. Now, depending on the nature and understanding of the parties, it could be a request, it could be a proposal, it could be an offer, it could be an asking,
right?
Or it could be multiple of those things.
Right.
And that goes back to the fluid and changeable nature, dynamic nature of, you know, the parties.
Right. Right.
So, all right. So we've got about 1 minute left. We've got a new guest on that's coming next week. His name's Daryl Sprout. I just want to give you guys a heads up. Daryl is actually a zero-point energy master. There's a lot of Reiki masters, and that's become real popular. And what he's done is he's using zero-point energy to integrate with the lower or subsidiary energies like Reiki and all these different types of things. And it's a very, very neat practice that he has. He's also a world-renowned snake man, a snake handler.
Wow.
So it's going to be very interesting. He'll be on next week, Sunday at 5. And it's going to be amazing. So
He also did the voiceover for our intro.
That's our voiceover man too. You guys need a voiceover done. He's the guy to go to.
Right on.
Definitely. So, all right. Well, I mean, this has been a great show. We're also going to be doing a blog newsletter. We're starting all these YouTube web series to get into more of these techniques that we barely touched on. You know, we just kind of wanted to give you guys a bite of what we're about and where we're coming from. And we're going to have guests weekly from here on out. We might take a break every once in a while and come back to one of these discussion forums and or this forum style. So I appreciate
Fantastic.
You all. Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful show, and we'll see you next week. Tune in. Thank you.